Well, I'd like to welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit, Wendy Witt. She is an attorney and founder of AMillionFamilies.org, a social enterprise focused on protecting a million families with responsible estate planning. As a leader in the estate planning community, Wendy has mentored over 8,000 estate planning and elder law attorneys, empowering them to protect more families. So I think she knows what she's doing, and she's an excellent person to be talking to us today about all of these different legal aspects of our aging. So Wendy, welcome to the Caregiver Smile Summit.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me, Anthony. Sorry, I'm so excited to be here. I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's right. And for our viewers, Wendy and I are seeing each other kind of face-to-face virtually for the first time in a few years. So it's a pleasure to be talking with you. So why don't we just get into very basic basics. What is estate planning?
I'm glad you asked the question, because there are so many misconceptions about estate planning. Estate planning is, believe it or not, for absolutely everyone. I know you know that, Anthony, but a lot of your watchers and some participants may not know that everybody needs an estate plan, because it's simply about staying in control and protecting the ones that they love. So you can really think of estate planning not as for rich people, but for everyone, because everybody loves somebody, and that's what estate planning is all about. And it's really about creating a set of instructions that you can use, so people know what to do when you're not there to tell them anymore.
Yeah, and I guess the word, you know, I was just thinking about this. This came to mind. I guess the word estate throws people off, because they have this image of, you know, the grand estate, and so therefore don't see themselves in that scenario. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. A lot of people think, because they don't have a big estate, that they don't need estate planning, but it's really so much more than the money. It's making sure your kids are protected and cared for. It's making sure your wishes are carried out. And it's really about keeping peace in the family. So it doesn't really matter how much money you have. It's just all about protecting the people that you love.
Right. So why don't you go into what are the components of a good estate plan?
So the components are, in a way, standard, but the content is always customized. So a solid estate plan is always going to keep you in control while you're alive, so that you make your own healthcare decisions as long as you can. But if not, you get to choose who makes those healthcare decisions. Same with your finances. As long as you're able, of course, you're in control, you're in charge. But if you're not, don't you want to be the one to pick who's going to handle your finances? And then what about the kids? Think about that. If you don't select guardians, and actually backup guardians, and make sure they're able to serve, then the court will decide. And sometimes kids, unfortunately, end up the center of a family feud, or even in Child Protective Services. And I know that's not what you want.
Yeah, and one of our experts on this summit is a woman named Catherine Falk, and she's the daughter of Peter Falk, Columbo, if you remember that TV series. And they had a quite visible public battle with Peter Falk's second wife over guardianship. And their ability to even go see him, even when he had an advanced, you know, directive and, you know, medical power and all that stuff. So it was kind of interesting. So we'll be talking to her about that as well.
So, glad.
Yeah. And it's a nuance I wasn't even thinking about when I planned the summit, and then somebody suggested it. So, you know, when you look at our summit experts, we do have financial planners. We do have people who talk about advanced directives and things like that. So when you're looking at this holistically, should you be working with an attorney, a financial professional, accountant, and bring them all together on the same page? Because a lot of them have their own things they want you to do with them separately. But, you know, should you bring them together, and how do you do that?
It's essential. It's essential that you have professionals who are willing and able to work together and cooperate as a team, because your estate plan really does include all those professionals that you just mentioned. And you don't want to get conflicting advice. You need one plan that's cohesive, comprehensive, and works smoothly. Really for the finances, but think about it, you don't want to be a burden to your kids if you're ill, or if when you pass, you really want to make things as easy as possible. And working as a team will do that.
Okay. So I'll confess, we just recently had our wills and advanced directives done. Okay. I just turned 60. I should be ashamed. But you know, that's kind of how it goes. But you know, one of the things we had was, you know, of course our attorney set up a trust, and there's a lot of confusion around these trusts. I mean, I'll be honest with you. We have the trust. We haven't put anything in it yet. Because it sounded like if one of us passes, it's really not going to be an issue until there's just one left that it could be. So I'm even, you know, and I've read a lot about this and talked to our attorney ad nauseum about it, but still haven't made a move on any of this stuff because I really don't completely understand it. So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, when you set up a trust, and we did it for my mom when I was a caregiver for her, what does that mean? And what do you do with it?
So let me stop you right there and put this at the top of your to-do list. Your trust has to be funded. You absolutely need to transfer the assets into the trust. And let me explain why, and then circle back, you know, stop me if I don't answer your entire question. Your estate plan, whether it's will-based or trust-based, absolutely has to have your assets aligned. When you have a trust as the center of your estate plan, we call that funding, and you absolutely must transfer the assets into the trust, and your attorney, financial advisor can help you. The reason is because the trust has absolutely no power when it's empty. I mean, picture a bushel of apples, but the bushel is empty. You're going to be darn hungry, and that bushel is not doing you any good, that bushel basket. You need to transfer those apples into your trust. Because for organization, for to protect you and empower your disability trustees, if for some reason you're not able to handle your own finances, your disability trustees will handle those for you. And then after your death, while things might be easier with a married couple, if there's a blended family, children from another relationship, or if a power of attorney, which I'm sure you also have now, is not honored, you absolutely need that trust. And a lot of people hear about avoiding probate, and some attorneys think, oh, probate's not that bad, but they're not considering the real facts. They're not considering that probate is a public process, which means that anybody can see who got what, where they live. And so it just puts you open to aggressive charities, unscrupulous friends and family members, and even strangers can track down your beneficiaries. Plus, probate tends to delay things. It takes longer, and don't you want your family just to be able to move along?
Right. Okay. And so, you know, our attorney obviously has been, you know, move the checking accounts, move the house, all that kind of stuff. It sounds daunting, but I think I'm making it more than maybe it should be. But if I'm having problems, I can imagine, you know, other viewers looking at this might seem overwhelmed by it.
I don't like paperwork either, so I can definitely identify that. But again, your attorney can help you on that and guide, and that just means you just sign some papers, and so can your financial advisor.
Right. Okay. So, you know, one of the big things when we're talking about all this is that people want to protect themselves should, God forbid, they have to go into a skilled nursing or assisted living. So, you know, how when you talk about this in its whole context, how can you avoid losing, you know, money to the, you know, and we've seen it time and again, you work all your life and then basically all your money goes to the nursing home.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's a big fear. And wouldn't it be nice to have that fear laid to rest so you just don't have to worry about it? That's where planning comes in. So there's basically three ways to pay for a nursing home. You're going to private pay, and that might be $90,000, $100,000 a year. You're going to get long-term care insurance, and that will pay or pay part of it. Or then you use a government program called Medicaid, and it's available in every state. So what I advise is that when people actually, and this age might surprise you, is actually when you're about 50, my age, you need to start thinking about this, because that's when to buy long-term care insurance if you're going to do it. if you're 60, 70, it's not too late, but it will cost you more at that time. And if you've already developed some kind of health problem, you might not be eligible. So it's always better, no matter what you're doing, to plan ahead. I do want to dispel one myth, and that's using Medicare to pay for. Medicare is health insurance. It's not going to pay for your long-term care. So it's absolutely necessary that you put that out of your mind and know that you need to do some kind of planning. And it used to be, when I first started practicing in estate planning law in 1999, the average stay in a nursing home was about 3 years. People are now staying upwards of 20 years. People with $2 million are exhausting their estates paying for long-term care. So I just reach out to your local estate planning or elder law attorney and get a plan in place.
Okay. So essentially there are ways to protect yourself.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. And the sooner you plan, the better. It will cost you less and you'll have more options, just like everything in life. But yeah, there are options that you can protect the assets that you have, either for yourself, you're the primary person that we want to protect, and make sure that you have a high quality standard of care. And then if there's leftover money, that money can go to the people that you love.
Right, right. And you know, 25% of family caregivers are actually millennials, we've come to find. And so I use my wife as a poster child, because when she was, I think, 38, she bought long-term care insurance from her company as a volunteer benefit, and she's kept it all these years. Wow. And so you can, and she's added the coverage, she's added an inflation rider, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for people out there who think, you know, you're too young to buy this, the sooner you buy, like you said, Wendy, the cheaper it's going to be. And if you keep those payments up, you'll be glad when you get older, because try to enter the market now, and it's, you know, what she pays a year, you know, we would have to pay a month.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what peace of mind that creates. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, change this out a little bit. Should our listeners put their child's name on their bank account or house to make things easier?
Oh, I hear that all the time. And no, don't do it. Don't ever do it. And here's why. It's so common, and I understand why so many people want to do it. They want to make things easier for their children. They want things to pass smoothly, or they want to avoid inheritance taxes. Oh, but there are downsides that most people don't realize. So let me mention them, and then I'll say also, obviously, my fallback is always talk to your estate planning attorney about this, because they're going to give you good advice for your individual situation. But here's what can happen. So you put your house in joint names with your daughter, and you have two other children. So if that daughter gets divorced or goes bankrupt or has some other kind of financial lawsuit against her, whoosh, there goes your house. You lose your house because it's become an asset of your daughter's. Number two, your daughter gets angry with you. Something's going on. She develops a drug problem, or she's just seeing things very differently and becoming entitled. She can actually move into that house with you and do what she can to force you out. You think it's not going to happen to you? It happens all the time. I'm very sorry to say. Another thing, let me check my notes here, because I know there was a couple other things. When you transfer a house or some kind of monies to avoid inheritance tax, you might actually increase the taxes. And most people are getting this, but inheritance tax, okay, so it's 1%, 4%, even 6% in Pennsylvania, or it used to be 6%. That's a lot of money, and you think, I need to avoid that. Well, guess what happens when you transfer a house into your child's name? They assume, and I'm getting a little tax talk here, but they assume your basis, which means when you sell the house, but when they sell the house, then they're going to pay capital gains taxes on everything, your basis, from what you paid when you bought it, usually, to what it's worth today. Capital gains are about 20%. That's what much more, a huge tax compared to what you would pay with inheritance taxes. So always get good advice before you do that. And then remember I said that this person had three children. She put the house in just one child's name. Then you disinherit. You actually disinherit children you love from that asset, because that asset will transfer immediately by operation of law and disinheriting the other children.
And good luck with the other two siblings trying to go after the other one for this monetary share.
Exactly, Anthony. I mean, think about the family discord and the upset for generations. It could tear your family apart for generations.
Yeah. Okay. So when you look at some of this, who should our viewers name as their agent under a power of attorney?
Powers of attorney are important documents. They're very, very powerful documents. When you sign a power of attorney, you're actually authorizing someone else to sign your name. And think about what that means. Selling your house, managing your assets, taking money from account to account. First of all, it's a big responsibility. That person has to be extremely organized, willing to work with other professionals, such as your estate planning attorney, your financial advisor, and your CPA. And you have to trust them implicitly. Unfortunately, powers of attorney are abused all the time. And kids who their parents trusted end up in jail. So it needs to be someone you trust, someone who is extremely organized and can work well with other professionals.
Yes, a good point. And in our own situation, we did have a close friend that we've entrusted with that. So not the kids.
Let me just expand on that, because you have a really good point. The people, your trusted helpers, don't always have to be your children. They may not be appropriate at all. And you don't have to name the same person, this person that you named as an agent under a power of attorney, as your agent under your financial power of attorney, because people are good at different things.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what's an ethical will?
An ethical will, let me distinguish it from a living will or your will. A living will is your advanced healthcare directive that you don't want heroics at the end of your life. You just want to be kept comfortable. So that's a living will. And that's very different than a will. A will is where you dispose of your property, name your personal representatives or executors, depending on your state, and name guardians for any minor children. That's totally different from the ethical will. An ethical will is really about passing on your love, your memories, your legacy, your hopes, your dreams. So it can be the form of a legacy letter or a love letter. I like to call it love letters. So the love letter can be individual letters to the people in your life that you love, special cousins, best friends, children, grandchildren, spouses, and so forth. But it can take another form. If you're not a writer, you can make a video, create a scrapbook, short films, a picture collection, a collection of memories. It can just be even your advice for the future. What would you say to these people that you love if you were there when they turned 16, 25, 40, and so forth? Let me jot down. I know I jotted down a few ideas. Let me see if I have anything else on there. I guess, Anthony, this really goes to my point that estate planning is not just about the money. It's really about the love and passing that on and that guidance. So you may want to write, and I suggest you do, special letters to any guardians that you name, guardians of minor children, so that they know what you want, how you want your children raised, what your dreams are for the children, how you would guide them, what you want for their education or their life or their how to handle challenges. That's one way. My favorite example is in my own family. My husband's father actually died when we were very young. I was in my first year of law school, and Joe was my husband, boyfriend then, but was in his senior year of college. He had just turned 22, and his father died, and it was really traumatic for the family. And when they were going through his dad's things, they found slips of little paper in his dad's wallet that he had been carrying around with him. And the slips said, paper was like, "I'm so proud of you, Joe. I love you." And Joe played football at the time, so it said, "You're a superstar," and things like that. Well, it's 28 years later. My husband is now 50. He still has those scraps of paper. I mean, it really, really was his most important inheritance.
Well, that's an amazing story. And that's a new concept that I frankly haven't heard of until today. So there's nothing necessarily legally binding with this. It's more of, like you say, passing on the love.
Yeah, exactly. It's passing on the love. So think of it as a love letter, but it can be in any form that you like.
That's an awesome thing. I'd love to talk to you more offline about that. So finally, and what you're doing, and when we first met, what the passion was of getting a message around was this millionfamilies.org. Can you tell our viewers about that?
Oh, I would love to. A millionfamilies.org. You can find it online at a millionfamilies.org. It's really a community where you can come and safely learn about how to protect your family, how to leave a legacy, mistakes that you don't want to make, and really just be there and protect your family. It's for good folks summit participants who just are trying to do the right thing and find guidance. And then it also, you can connect with other trusted advisors who can help you with all kinds of legal or financial or other kinds of guidance that you need. So it's a safe place to be.
That's awesome. So I think we've kind of come full circle, and I'll summarize just quickly. I think the three points I'm taking away is that, first of all, estate planning is for everyone. Second, it's complicated, and you need a trusted professional to help you with it. And
the mistakes, and you're absolutely right. Mistakes are horrid. They can really disassemble your family for generations. So absolutely work with a professional.
And third, if you want to just, before you pick that professional and delve deep into it, you can go to amillionfamilies.org and learn first. And before, so you're comfortable enough to be speaking the language when you then take the next step.
Exactly. Thank you.
Great. Well, Wendy, it's so good to see you again. And I really want to thank you for participating in the Caregiver Smile Summit. This has been great information.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me, Anthony. Good luck to you.
Thanks.